1.
WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. This is Black History Month, and what better way to kick off a conversation about little-known but important stories about our history than to talk about the role Black women played in getting the vote. Tonight, we talk to Angela Dodson, author of the new book, Remember the Ladies, Celebrating Those Who Fought for Freedom at the Ballot Box. Also joining us, Dr. E. Faye Williams, National President of the National Congress of Black Women. If you have a question, if you have a comment about this discussion, certainly join us at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Angela, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Angela, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I most certainly can. Thank you so much for joining me. Dr. Williams, always good to see you.
Thank you, and hello, Angela.
Hi, how are you?
I'm blessed.
Let's talk, first of all, about what most of us learn in high school, Angela, about women's suffrage. Susan B. Anthony, and we'll have a quiz tomorrow. And that's what we, you know, that's usually what we get.
Yes.
But this book really opens up, it expands, it drills deep, it goes beyond the 20th century. It takes us much, much farther back. Talk to me, first of all, about the kind of research that you needed to do to be shoulder deep in this information.
Well, first of all, you have to understand where women were coming from and how little they had in terms of rights, but also how difficult their lives were even in coming to this country. As the book talks mostly about us as a nation, I started with colonial women, but I also address Native women and the first Black women to arrive in the country and talk about what women's lives were like early on before anybody even thought about demanding rights. And, you know, women were on this continent for centuries, if you want, or probably thousands of years, before anybody thought about asking for the vote. Women had been at the bottom of society all over the world for, you know, all of the time that humans have interacted with each other. So for women to suddenly decide that they needed to start demanding rights or at least talking about what rights they needed, you know, I had to know where they were coming from and what laws were on the books, how women migrated, that kind of thing. And, you know, you find that women couldn't even own their own property. Even if your father willed you property, you couldn't hold it in your own name. Women couldn't divorce easily, if at all. And if they did, they couldn't have custody of their children. So there were so many deprivations, and they weren't educated. Women didn't go to school until, colleges didn't open up to women until the 1830s or so. So there was a lot that had to be done to find out all that information.
When it comes to Black women and the vote, when were the first asks, the first demands, the first peeps of protest in this country when it came to equality and voting?
In terms of African-American women, is
yes.
That what you said?
Mm-hmm.
The African-American women started going to the national annual women's rights conventions as early as the 1850s. Sojourner Truth did, surely. And by the 1860s, several women were very, very active. Frances E.W. Harper, who was a poet and an abolitionist speaker, went to a lot of the meetings before and after the war. But more importantly, Frederick Douglass helped to advertise the first known women's rights convention in the nation through his paper, The North Star. And he attended that meeting. He's the only person of color known to have been there. and he was the only person who spoke up in favor of the resolution demanding the vote. Mm-hmm. Had he not, it probably would not have carried because even some of the women were opposed to it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're having a Black History conversation tonight about the role Black women played in getting the vote. We are talking to author Angela Dobson. She is behind the new book, Remember the Ladies, Celebrating Those Who Fought for Freedom at the Ballot Box, also with Dr. E. Faye Williams, National President of the National Congress of Black Women. If you have a question or comment, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Williams, kind of put this in perspective. I kind of made a joke in the beginning about usually when we talk about women and the vote, we only hear about Susan B. Anthony and the suffrage movement of the early 20th century. Why does there seem to be such a deficit when it comes to learning about the other people and the other parts of the movement, not only by women, but Black women?
Well, you know, Harold, that's a question we've had in the National Congress of Black Women, and that's why our, you know, we talk about our motto is our stories, our truths. We have to tell them because they have been left out. And even going back, I wanted to ask Angela if she saw that Native women actually had many rights before Black women, before men, because they control what you talked about, the divorce and what have you. And I read that Native women actually, if they wanted a divorce, all they had to do was pack up the man's clothing and put them out on the porch. It's not that easy now, but I just wonder if you ran across that before I go on.
I ran across a little of it. I wasn't able to go deeply into it because I couldn't find necessarily the information that I wanted at the time.
Okay. But Black women have always had to work and divide our attention with voting rights for all of us, with family rights, with, you know, civil rights, with housing rights. All of it. We've never been able to just concentrate on our rights as women. And I sometimes say that about many women I know is that we do so many things that no one thinks of us as an expert in any one subject because we are doing all of these things. But it is time for us to tell the stories of women. And right here in Washington, D.C., we've had several women who historically have worked on the vote. Nannie Helen Burroughs, you can think of her. They're Mary Church Terrell. So we didn't have to go very far to know people who were working on women's rights. And even some of the animosities that came about in the days that you talked about earlier when Frederick Douglass was speaking, some of those still exist today. As I talk to my white sisters, I say to them, you know, you have betrayed us as women. You may have thought that you started the movement, but you have betrayed us all the way up to today because you do not vote in your own best interest. You vote in the best interest of your husbands, your fathers, your grandfathers, your uncles, etc. And it's time for you to begin, as you want us to help to work for women's rights, to also look at some of our rights, like voting rights and other rights that I mentioned. We are always there for women's rights, but that's just one part of us.
Right. You're certainly right that those have been an issue all along. Let me just say first that I am a member of the National Congress in the Trenton, New Jersey chapter.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
But the issues that have divided Black women and white women have always been there. Although, you know, a lot of people, like you mentioned, Mary Church Terrell, became very active in the main women's rights movement, but they also started organizations of their own. And people, even back as early as Frances E.W. Harper that I mentioned, brought those kind of issues to the table, that white women's lives and our lives were very, very different because we've always been working, we've always had to work, and always wanted to work in some cases. You know, women who had careers that they chose, but it was not as much of an option for us. But, you know, the same issues came up in the early women's rights movement very frequently. White women often compared their rights and themselves to enslaved people. And there might be similarities to them, but there were big differences to us that didn't get put on the table. And in the, you know, in the 1970s women's movement, the same issues came up, and a lot of the same issues are coming up. This wave of the women's movement that's going on now, whatever we want to call it. So, you know, we're never coming from the same place, but we shared the deficit of not being able to vote. And black women even more so, because black women or black men in the South were virtually deprived of the vote in most cases by, you know, all kinds of contraptions and laws and whatever, as we know. And because one of the reasons that it took so long for women to get the vote was that Southern lawmakers didn't want black women to have it specifically. And that was an issue up to the time that suffrage passed.
Talk to me about that real quick. I've got to go to a break in about a minute. Talk to me a little bit more about that, because that's rather curious.
Yeah, well, people, it's even in the congressional record testimonies of, you know, floor debates early on among white men, you know, who would have been the only people in the room, talking about not wanting or trusting black people with the vote, that black men hadn't used it that well, and that surely black women could not be trusted to make those kind of decisions. They didn't believe white women should be trusted to make those kind of decisions. Voting was such a heavy responsibility where they actually might have to know something. And they didn't think women capable of that kind of thought. They certainly didn't think black women capable of that kind of thought.
Interesting. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're having a Black History discussion about black women and the vote. What they did to help develop the initiative, suffrage and other and otherwise, to get the vote, not only for themselves, but for the black community. My guests are Dr. Ife Williams, National President of the National Congress of Black Women, also Angela Dodson, author of the new book, Remember the Ladies, Celebrating Those Who Fought for Freedom at the Ballot Box. I'm going to take a break in just a bit, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Donna in D.C. We're going to take your phone call. Also, if you are on the line, just stay with us. Don't hang up. You will be able to hear the program, but we do want to talk to you, want to get you involved in this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just 15 seconds. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, Glasshouse.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our Black History conversation tonight with Angela Dodson, author of the new book, Remember the Ladies, Celebrating Those Who Fought for Freedom at the Ballot Box, and Dr. E. Faye Williams, National President of the National Congress of Black Women. If you have a comment or question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Donna, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was telephoning regarding this wonderful issue as it relates to black women and the celebration of Harriet Tubman soon to replace Jackson on the $20 bill, and what a celebration that is. And also, the analogy of black women having been historically raped, nursed white women's children historically, and how the hashtag me issue now correlates to white and other races of women that have had difficulty with the upper echelons of society, but how black women have always had issues with the greater society and overcame all of these issues. I'd like to hear both women comment on that issue.
Dr. Williams, I'll let you go first.
Well, I think we've always understood that we had to be at the table. You know, sometimes when we're opposed to an issue, we'll just stay out of it. That's not the answer. We have to be there in order to give our opinions. I know that it causes double work for me to have to attend their meetings and our meetings. But while I'm there, I'm always encouraging them to be involved in our issues, too. We heard a lot about women who were opposed to blacks, either men or women, having the right to vote, like Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and others. But keep in mind that Sojourner Truth had to stand up and give strong voice, too, for us even to be considered for getting the right to vote, because there were men of our own race who were opposed to our getting the right to vote. And so Sojourner had to stand up and say, what difference would it make if, you know, black men and others were going to get the right to vote? We would simply be enslaved by both white men and black men. So we like to think that we don't work against each other's interests. And I'm sure that isn't the way that the black men thought of it. But they were thinking of their going first and our going second. And that's pretty much the way it still is in our society, except for those of us who push our way, pull and insist and stand up and speak out for our own rights. Many women don't speak out for their rights. Every woman should be standing up, should be in those marches, and not allowing the issue to be taken over by someone else. We, you know, it's important to us, too.
Angela?
Right. Well, I certainly agree that, you know, you have to be in the room. And there were a lot of black women who felt that way. And, you know, they had to go head-to-head with white women in order for our issues to get on the table at all. Excuse me. But if you're not in the room and you're not trying to build coalitions with these people, even if you have big differences with them, then you can't get anything done. One of the biggest things I learned from this book was that it took lots of people, white women, white men, black women, all working for suffrage to get this movement going in the beginning. Most of the early suffragist leaders were abolitionists, very, very strong, radical abolitionists. To the point that they would not even use products that might have been made by enslaved labor. And they had, you know, stores, and they educated each other about what products to avoid. They got out of the cotton trade. They avoided sugar. Several of the organizers of the first Women's Rights Convention were also active in the Underground Railroad. So at any time they were planning these women's meetings, they were also hiding people. And several of the suffragists write about how they did that. Now, that doesn't absolve them of all kinds of other differences we had with them, but, you know, and some of them went through phases, particularly Elizabeth Cady Stanton, where she was virulently racist and, you know, made her thoughts known in writing and in person, you know, if asked. So it's always been there, and we will always have our differences, probably. But you still have to find ways to work together.
And, you know, they also played, some white women also played the race card when it came to protecting their femininity or their softness or their whatever as women. And they talked in terms of lynching then. If that is what it takes to protect white women, that go ahead and lynch, you know, thousands per year or what have you. But we can't just remember that because, as you said, there were white women, white people who were both suffragists and abolitionists.
Which, right. Donna, thank you so much for your phone call. Angela, that this very point brings me to my next question, because on the surface, the relationship between suffragists and white suffragists and black women sounds extremely complicated, because white women, yes, they wanted to vote. Black women certainly were fighting for the vote, but were they fighting for themselves, fighting for black men? You know, how did that dynamic work when there was this huge political surge during the early 20th century?
Well, you know, at that point, it seemed clear that suffrage was going to happen at some point. But as I said earlier, the issue was still on the table, that, you know, as far as Congress and Southern lawmakers were, that they didn't want black women to have the vote because that would double the black vote. On the other hand, people like W.E.B. Du Bois fought for women's suffrage because they knew it would increase the black vote. He turned over at least a couple of issues of the crises just to the women's suffrage issue, and he spoke in favor of it for a long time. But, you know, on the other hand, there were men who didn't perhaps want women to have the vote, with black men. But, you know, black men in the end mostly came out for it. Some people didn't, like Booker T. Washington.
Mm-hmm.
It was not particularly in favor of it. So there, you know, there were some divisions, and certainly white men were divided. There were white men who came forward in the end for the movement. There's a book about particularly upscale white men who came out in favor of suffrage and had their own parades and marched in parades with women, that sort of thing. So, you know, there was a lot going on, and there was a period in the 1917 march on Washington by the women. There was a period where Alice Paul, the leader of that, did not want black women in the parade, and then decided that they could be in the parade, but they had to go to the back of the parade. And Ida B. Wells pretended to go along with this, but then when her delegation passed, she came right out of the crowd and marched with her white friends at near the front. Other black women complied, or some say that there were other black women mixed in the audience. But, you know, that was a big issue. Then when Alice Paul needed black men's help in Tennessee to get that was the final state they needed, she asked for the NAACP to help her. And they reminded her of her, you know, racist leanings or actions in the past, but they did it anyway, and they helped to bring about the final women's suffrage vote.
Also in that march that you talked about, there were black women. The 22 founders of Delta Sigma Theta marched in that march.
Yes,
and
we mentioned it.
Because there were many very light-skinned Delta Sigma Theta members at that time, I can imagine when you mentioned some mixed into the crowd that some of those might have been Deltas. But the proud fact is that all 22 founders were together and marched together.
They're not photographed in my book. I mentioned it in my book, but there's a very famous photograph of them marching.
Yes.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the role that black women played in women's suffrage and getting the vote. Let's move a little bit further forward. When we talk about after women, you know, got the vote, I'm often struck, and I'm glad I have you here, Angela, because I do want you to talk about the first scene in Selma when we saw Oprah Winfrey, you know, go to make sure that she could, you know, get the right to vote, get her voting card or what have you.
Right.
And there were all of these kinds of obstacles. So, you know, we have on one hand, we have the law.
Yes.
But then we have the realities of voting, not just for black people, but for black women. Talk to me about those struggles as we moved, you know, through the center of the middle of the 20th century.
Right. Well, fortunately, I just saw that movie again in the last week or so. You know, she goes in, I think she had been there several times, and they asked her different questions, and finally they ask her how many sheriffs or something there were in the state.
Or judges or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and she answers it correctly, but then he says, name them, and she knows she's defeated. But, you know, people were asked questions like that, recite the Constitution or the, you know, whatever. All of the presidents and their wives' names or something, you know, any quiz or whatever could have been given to these people, and that, you know, that's how, you know, black men were long deprived of the vote in the South, even, you know, though they ostensibly had it, you know, since after the Civil War. But few were able to exercise it, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, we need to keep reminding our children about why it's so important to vote. It, you know, it took us another, you know, almost century to secure that vote and make sure we were able to use it, and it took, you know, women at least 70 years after they started asking for the vote to get it. So, you know, I think a lot of young people take that for granted and they don't use the vote. I personally, when I go vote, I try to walk to the poll and come back. Sometimes my husband drops me off, but, you know, I like to remind myself, you know, on my walk home that what I have just done in exercising my rights. So.
And it's always good to remind them of what Fannie Lou Hamer and Amelia Boynton and these women went through to gain the right to just to register to vote. I think it's important for us to allow young people and to insist that they see movies like Selma and to go there the first weekend in March when some of the things are reenacted there and the stories are told, because otherwise they have no way of knowing. So it's our fault if our children don't know our history. And as Harold said a while ago, it is complicated because even today as we deal with another sort of related movement in terms of the Me Too movement, black women, it's very complicated for us because, you know, during the period of slavery, we were reluctant to say anything negative or to go against black men, no matter what it was.
Exactly.
The same is true today in the Me Too movement, because we're always afraid that it's going to cut some of those rights that we have, because we are already having to go back to try to reclaim some of the rights that we struggled for together all of these years. So we have to remember that and not just beat up on black men about things that might be happening now. That's one concern, but it isn't the only one, because we are losing many of our rights and we're having to repeat working for them.
Angela, when did, in your research and also in your mind, did you discover that perhaps black women fighting for the right to vote and also participating in the civil rights movement, were they always parallel? Did they intertwine? Did they separate? Did they come back together? How would you characterize that?
I'm sorry, your first question was, when did I start?
Yeah, no, when would you, in your research, when was there ever a point when you looked at your research and said, we've got civil rights on the left, we've got, you know, voting rights, you know, on the right, and the participation of black women, were they always together, or did they parallel, did they separate, did they cross? How would you characterize that?
I found that all of these movements were intertwined to the point that you really couldn't separate out the players, and you couldn't separate out the issues, because, as I mentioned, a lot of the early suffragists, most of them, were abolitionists.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be going to an abolition meeting one day and a women's rights convention another day, and as I describe in the story, there's a period where all of them are in New York attending two different temperance conferences, a woman's conference, and an abolition meeting.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's black women and black men, and a black man got kicked out of one of the temperance meetings along with a white woman minister. And, you know, they're kind of hand in glove, at least throughout the 1850s up to the early 1860s.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a big falling out over the 14th and 15th Amendments, and they separate into different organizations. But some of the black women attended either group after they split up.
I need to take a break.
Douglas never stopped going to the meetings after they split.
Angela, I need to take a break. But when we come back, you know, I want to talk about voting women and how all of this seems to have come full circle. Unpleasantly so.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that after the break. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're having a Black History conversation about black women and the vote. We'll be back in just a moment.
Mom.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our Black History conversation with Angela Dodson, author of the new book, Remember the Ladies, Celebrating Those Who Fought for Freedom at the Ballot Box, and Dr. E. Faye Williams, National President of the National Congress of Black Women. Before the break, Angela, I was talking about these things coming full circle, and let me put that in context so that I can have you, you know, comment on it. Obviously, you know, this book is about the very difficult struggle, not only of women as a whole, but also black women and the right to vote. Well, here we are in the 21st century, the Voting Rights Act, constantly batted around, constantly threatened. We still have voter ID issues, and some would argue mostly, but not specifically, but not only in southern states, where when you spoke about this issue earlier, where you had, you know, southern lawmakers trying to prevent black people, and by default, black women, from voting. Talk to me about that, where these two ends of history are meeting right now.
Well, we've had this, you know, long struggle over the Voting Rights Act and attempts to, you know, purge voter rolls. And now people are talking a lot about gerrymandering and how that deprives us of the vote. So, you know, the battle is never over. We're always having to fight for it. If anything, in this country, we should be expanding the right to vote. We should, you know, make it easy to get registered when you get your driver's license or something, or make it mandatory when you get out of high school. Instead, we're, you know, people are trying to shrink the ability and the hours and you know, demand IDs that aren't necessary, really. I mean, I know when I go to vote, I don't have to show an ID, but I have to sign my signature in the same place in the same way I've signed it for 30 years. I can't go in there and have a completely different signature. So we do have a system of identifying people. And, you know, if anything, people are less inclined to vote. Hardly anybody is trying to break in and commit voter fraud. We can't get the people who are registered to go near the polls half the time.
Except for those 3 million people who voted illegally, as we've heard in 2016. And we are still waiting to hear who those 3 million people are, right?
Right, exactly.
and you mentioned about registering to vote. When you go to get your driver's license, you know, there's an active case that has just been heard by the Supreme Court on that very issue, I believe, from Ohio. And we're waiting for the answer on that motor voter issue right now. Mm-hmm. So we just need to be encouraging more states to actually enact it, because they're trying to take even that away in the few places that it exists.
Talk to me, Dr. Williams, about why black women voters are so significant now, perhaps one would argue more than any other time in American history.
Well, you know, almost always in our history, Hal, we've had to vote for the lesser of two evils. But we've begun to find that we have strengths in some communities where we can run for those offices, too. We've so often voted strongly and helped others, but now we can help ourselves and have a right to expect others to vote for us. I'm thinking of my own state of Louisiana, where now we have 19 black women mayors, and 3 of those are in the largest cities in Louisiana, New Orleans, Shreveport, and Baton Rouge. And that shows us, I believe, and gives us the strength across the country to begin to see that we can vote and we can run for those offices and make the decisions instead of just having decisions made for us. In addition to what happened in Louisiana, we, of course, can always point to Alabama and what happened statewide in the senatorial race. But we can look at other cities where there are black women mayors now, at Atlanta, Charlotte, and Minneapolis. There's just so many places where black women are running, and we're beginning to see our strength. As we have voted so strongly for others, we now see that we can vote for ourselves, and that's a blessing.
And also, you're in New Jersey, right, Angela?
Yes, I am.
Oh, yes, I forgot to mention
New
Jersey.
So New Jersey, obviously, yes. You know, now has a female
lieutenant governor.
Lieutenant governor.
Right.
Do you believe that politicians are paying attention to the black female vote? We know that Hillary Clinton tried to focus on the black female vote during the course of her failed, you know, campaign for president. But what about some of the lesser offices, the governors and the mayors and the like? How important is it for them to pay attention?
I think it's very important. As I point out in the book, you know, apparently it worked for Hillary because 96% of black women voted for her, and 53% of white women voted for Trump. And we saw similar numbers in Alabama. But one thing we do know is that record numbers of women are signing up to run for offices this year. I was just reading that close to 400 women are running for the House of Representatives, and about 22 of them, I believe, are black. And in my district, I have a black congresswoman, Bonnie Watson Coleman. So, you know, it's very important. And, you know, we're seeing women like Kamala Harris speak up. But certainly at the school board level, at the mayoral level, at city council, all those things, black women, you know, need to be coming forward to try to get into office. And I think it's happening from, you know, everything I'm hearing anecdotally, and I've seen a couple of stories about that recently. It's going to be very, very important. I think Emily's List says a record number of people have filed with them, a record number of women to run for offices in the next couple of years.
Dr. Williams, who are, in your mind, the modern crusaders, the black female crusaders for the vote? And you can leave your name off the list because you're here. But right now, who do we need to really pay attention to, dare I say, for the 21st century suffrage movement?
Well, I think we can look at many of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus. Of course, there's Maxine Waters, who always is out there on every issue for us. We should be listening to her. But then, as Angela mentioned, there's Kamala Harris that we can look up to. Also, those of us who get people out to vote, register people and get people out to vote. Those who stand, like Melanie Campbell, and there are others who are speaking out, and we should listen to them. We should listen to the ones that are speaking out, not just for our right to vote, but for our dignity and our rights, period. Like the movements like Black Lives Matter and others. All of these are important. We should look at the young people who worked down in Alabama, who worked very hard over a period of a short time to get the best person that is more likely to work and vote for our rights. We need to read. You know, one of the things we as a people don't always read, we don't analyze. My friend Dick Gregory always said we need to wake up and we need to stay woke. Some of us look at a little bit of progress and then we go back to sleep and we think we give up on it. But even after we vote for someone, we need to be there to make sure they are voting in our best interest. And I think that's where we sometimes are falling down. But we need to look at the heads of sororities. Sororities were very actively involved in the Hillary Clinton election. And sometimes our people get the idea that because we belong or in charge of a nonprofit organization, we cannot be leaders. We can be leaders as individuals, even though we may belong to the National Congress of Black Women or Delta Sigma Theta, Alpha Kappa Alpha, or Zeta Phi Beta, or one of the other organizations. We can say all 30 members of our organization supports. We just can't say that the nonprofit by its name supports someone. And we slip down on that because I've often heard people say, well, you know, we're a nonprofit and we can't do that. Not true. People in nonprofits can also support people. But we need to look out for who's out there in the community all around the year that's doing things to help our people. And those are the same ones who are likely going to be working to register voters and to get people out to vote. Because no need to register them if we're not going to work to get them out.
Angela, I've got about 90 seconds. I'll let you have the last bit. What is it that surprised you most about your research and what you've discovered? And what do you want people to take away from your book?
I'm sorry, say the last part again.
What do you want people to take away from your book? What's the takeaway?
I would like for people to take away the very fact that people have to work together, that coalitions have to be built and coalitions have to be nursed and brought along. And that, you know, if you stay on the battlefield long enough, you can get things done. That's one thing. And certainly the thing that surprised me the most was the fact that these people, the early suffragists, were so heavily involved in abolition causes. I don't think I had ever known that or thought about it much.
Interesting. For those who are interested in finding out more about you and the book, is there a website that they can log on to and find out more about you?
Yes, you can reach my website at www.angela, A-N-G-E-L-A, the middle initial P, Dodson, D-O-D-S-O-N, D like David, O-D like David, S-O-N, .com.
Okay.
And you can also get me probably through the Hachette website, which I don't have in front of me at the
moment. Well, don't worry about that. We'll just stick with your website for now.
Yes.
How's that? That's angelapdodson.com. And, of course, we're going to be posting that on the WHUR website. A little after 8:30 or so. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, Dr. Williams.
And all right, again, and we are also looking for members, and we have a website.
Oh, yeah, well, please, share. Go ahead and share that. Share that with me real quick.
NationalCongressBW.org, and just remember, it is through our struggles that we gain our victories.
National Congress
BW for Black Women, NationalCongressBW.org.
I'll also post that as well. So Angela Dodson and Dr. Ife Williams, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Angela.
Congratulations on the book. And we'll be talking soon. That is The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, February 5th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.